The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray on Talk Radio Europe.
Welcome back to today's book show. Joining us on the line now is Mitzi Saretto. She's a best-selling author and creator and presenter of the web channel Mitzi TV, which covers quirky London. Her outspoken views on the erotic literary scene have earned her the reputation as the author and editor who has put the literature back into erotica. Her latest book, Pride and Prejudice, Hidden Lusts, is a raunchy version of the Jane Austen classic. Welcome to the show, Mitzi.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us. So when did you start writing? How old were you when you wrote your first book?
10 years old.
Really? Wow.
Well, I was quite precocious, yes.
And what was it about?
It was actually a rather gory murder mystery, full of lots of bloodshed and mayhem.
Wow, at the age of 10, really?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, I think I finished it when I was 11, so it was at the cusp.
So where do all your ideas come from for these books?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, ideas come out of the blue for me, and I tend to do books that are not necessarily the same thing as the previous one. You know, I bounce around and you know, get involved with various different things. So I tend not to repeat myself too much, I hope.
Because you've written some non-fiction books as well, and a lot of books on eroticism and erotic literature. How would you describe erotic literature?
Well, you know, there's so many different ways to really describe it. I'm kind of an anti-label person. I know the label's been stuck to me, but I prefer to rather have the books stand on their own and speak for themselves. Sometimes you say something's erotic or erotica, and it might put some people off, or they might make assumptions about the book, thinking it's rather disposable and of little value. So that's one reason why I try to, you know, get away from the label a bit.
But how would, regardless of whether you're describing your books or not, how would you describe erotic literature?
Well, the eroticism is a key theme in any book that is labeled as erotic literature, so clearly, obviously, if you're looking for eroticism, that's what you're going to get in the book. But you know, having said that, there should be an underlying story as well. It shouldn't just be that. So, you know, as I said, the eroticism is a key element of the story.
But what's the difference between romance and erotica, or erotica and pornography? What's the difference between them all? I'm still trying to get you to explain erotica.
Yeah. Well, I mean, funny you mention romance, because, I mean, the romance genre is getting more and more heavily erotic, as opposed to the old days where it was, you know, quite, you know, Barbara Cartland-ish. I mean, it's a really thin line, because, I mean, if you have eroticism, romance is often an integral part of that. If you're talking about pornography, you're talking about something that's very, very one-dimensional and really doesn't have a lot of value. You know, a book requires some effort to read, and pornography, you know, you can watch a video or a DVD, and there's very little effort, and there's really very little engagement with the actual thing that you're looking at or reading.
Okay.
So, I mean, eroticism is something that should engage you on many levels. I mean, it is a sexual thing, but there is also an emotional thing. And I don't think you're going to find any emotional engagement in pornography.
No. Okay. Fair comment. So, looking at the new book then, Pride and Prejudice, are you a Jane Austen fan?
Yes, I am. I mean, I actually love Pride and Prejudice. I've probably seen every version that's been done on film and television, as well as having read the book. And I like her wit. I mean, she was a very interesting and funny satirist, and that's why I chose this specific work of hers to redo.
And how have you redone it?
Well, the essential plot is still there. I mean, the framework of the original story, so it does follow along in that. But I've sort of, well, are you familiar with the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies book?
And Zombies?
Yeah. There's been quite a few versions done like that. The reason I'm saying that one is because it was quite outrageous and outlandish, and my version is also rather outrageous and outlandish. But as opposed to having, say, flesh-eating monsters in it, mine just has a lot of sex. But having said that, it's also got a lot of humor. And so it kind of breaks away from perhaps the more of the romantic rehashes that have been done.
And do you think Jane Austen fans will enjoy the book, or do you think they could be offended?
It kind of works both ways. I think there's a bit of a fatwa out on me from some of the purists, literary purists and Austenites. Having said that, a lot of people really love the book. So I think it's a matter that people either love it or they hate it. There doesn't seem to be anything in between.
Yeah.
So what have you done to the characters? Tell us, what's Mr. Darcy like?
Well, Mr. Darcy is as aloof and, infuriating as ever. I don't think I've changed his character particularly, but we've gotten into his head a bit more and know a bit more of what he's thinking, especially regarding Elizabeth. But if the ladies who love Darcy, I don't think they'll be disappointed, because he's still a wonderfully romantic character, and he is definitely one of my favorite characters.
It's funny, when you went to say we've got into his head a little bit more, I thought you were going to say we've got into his pants a little bit more.
Well, we did as well. That goes without saying.
Of course. And what about Elizabeth?
Elizabeth, she's as, no nonsense as ever. You know, she's not one to suffer fools gladly, and she continues to remain so. She's still a heroine, just as she was in the original book, and she still sticks to her guns as far as what she's willing to accept and what she isn't willing to accept. I have not turned her into any type of raging nymphomaniac or anything like that. I mean, she still remains true to her original character. But again, much as Darcy's been dealt with, we tend to get more into Elizabeth's mindset as well and her sense of eroticism. Mm.
And how about Lady Catherine?
Oh, God, Lady Catherine. I've taken Lady Catherine, and let's just say, her ill temper, it's amplified in my version, and she tends to take it out on a lot of the parishioners. She sort of has a little thing going in her back garden. It's sort of disciplining her parishioners. Let's just leave it at that.
The mind boggles.
Poor Mr. Collins, that's all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about Mr. Wickham?
Oh, God, he's wicked. He is wicked. I mean, he continues to try to manipulate people and build his house of lies. And there's a big surprise as far as his accusation toward Darcy, just as there was in the original book where he accused Darcy of stealing his fortune. I don't want to give it away, but his accusations against Darcy are they're just absolutely outrageous.
And have you tried to make this as realistic as possible? Have you tried to imagine what they would be thinking in a sort of sexual sense, or have you tried to sort of make it outrageous and silly? How realistic is it?
Well, I mean, it is quite outrageous, but it's also realistic in the fact that I've stayed extremely true to Austen's language and storytelling style. So it's quite seamless, and all the critics who have reviewed it have said the same thing, that it's because, when you're dealing with something like a remake of a Jane Austen book, the worst thing is to bring the reader out of that time period and suddenly things don't match up. So it's pretty seamless as far as the language and everything. And as far as the actual things that people get up to, hey, Jane could only tell us so much in her day. So who knows what really was going on or what she might have said had she been allowed to.
Yeah. So how many times do you think you've read Pride and Prejudice, the original?
I'd had to, obviously, when I was working on my version, continually be referring to it, because I had to, decide what I wanted to use. So it's really hard to say, because to be perfectly frank, and I know that might be cheating, I've probably seen the BBC series with Colin Firth a lot more than I've actually read the book.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't with Colin Firth?
Well, it was excellent. What can I say?
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic adaptation. So looking at some of your other books, it made me chuckle, I have to say, seeing another book that you've done called In Sleeping Beauty's Bed, Erotic Fairy Tales. Should fairy tales be erotic?
Actually, that book, I've done research on each fairy tale in the book, so each one has an introduction, and I found that quite a lot of them were erotic when they started out, and it's only as time wore on that a lot of people got hold of them and took out any eroticism, and then they became children's literature. So in a way, I've been a bit more authentic to what they were at one point.
Oh, can you give us an example?
For instance, Cinderella, my research traced it all the way back to ancient China, and then there was all this evidence about the shoe being a sexual symbol. So when those stories first came about, that was an element that was used. Little Red Riding Hood was really a morality tale that, in essence, was trying to scare young girls away from sex. So that was used in that respect. There's just Rapunzel. If I'm correct from what I researched in that, you know how she's shut away in a tower.
Mm-hmm.
That relates back to a practice of actually taking young women during menstruation and locking them away from people.
Really?
Segregating them from society. Yeah, so, I mean, there was just so much incredible facts that I was finding out about all these tales. And some were quite rude and bawdy and raunchy. And as I said, when Charles Perrault and the Brothers Grimm came along, they just sort of excised all that stuff and turned it into a suitable for children.
Mm, interesting stuff. And you've got another book coming out in a few months' time, I think, called Red Velvet and Absinthe, Paranormal Erotic Romance.
Indeed I do. September it's coming out.
Fantastic. And again, the connection between paranormal and eroticism?
I've been a fan of paranormal for a very long time, since childhood, and there is a very sexy element to the paranormal. Now, of course, it's become so popular with all the vampire things going on, you know, Twilight, Vampire Diaries, and all of that. But, I mean, you've got to admit, some of this stuff's pretty sexy. And I've just sort of played with that theme, but also bringing in the traditional Gothic feel of Gothic literature, and that was my goal for the book. And so I've got sexy vampires, there's some werewolves, there's ghosts, there's all kinds of mysterious things going on.
There's a definite theme through your work, isn't there?
Well, I don't know, is there? Because, I mean, I do tend to bounce around. I mean, for instance, Pride and Prejudice, Hidden Lust is quite different from Red Velvet and Absinthe. So, although, of course, the erotic element is inherent in a lot of the works.
Well, yes, that's what I mean.
The theme you're referring to.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, do you think anything to a certain extent can be sexy? Do you think if you're feeling sexy yourself, then anything can be seen as sexy?
I think it's really down to the writer to portray something in a certain way. I suppose that's the same thing as if you wanted to bring in an element of mysteriousness to something. It's just whatever you want to, whatever theme you want to play up on. Mm-hmm. As long as it's done in a way that that's successful, I don't see why not.
Is there anything that you haven't done yet, something that you'd really like to tackle as your next project?
I've actually got about four projects bouncing around in various stages of development, and again, they're all sort of different. One is a quirky crime novel, which is not erotic at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have done things that aren't. I mean, I've done a book of women's revenge stories. That was certainly a bit more biting and cutting, so to speak. And I have another idea, a couple of ideas, actually, for some possible reimaginings of classic works. I did enjoy doing Pride and Prejudice. I think it would be fun to perhaps take something else and, mash it up, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I imagine that would be a real challenge, but really fun at the same time, I guess.
Well, I had a great time with Pride and Prejudice, Hidden Lust. I mean, I really, really enjoyed, you know, doing it. And I do hope that the readers enjoy reading it as well. It was just really, really fun to play with these characters and twist things around and play with the plot lines, but make it still sound like it was Jane's voice. Mm. That was the most important thing to me.
Sure. And tell us a little bit about Mitzi TV.
Ah, well, that is quirky London, as you said, basically going around for various things, seeing what's happening. I've covered things like a vintage car show. I've covered Morris dancing, which is you've got to see it to believe it. It's
yes.
great fun. I was recruited by them into dancing.
Really?
I'm embarrassed
to say I did it at school.
Did you really? Oh, yeah. God, well... We didn't get that in America, obviously, although they do have it there. They do have it there. I did one segment where I was going around East London asking people where I could find jellied eel.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite bizarre, sort of the man on the street thing. We got some very interesting reactions from people, as you can imagine.
Jellied eel and pie and liquor. You get that in East London, pie and liquor with jellied eels.
Oddly enough, we ended up in South London for the jelly deal. Somehow we crossed the river. And let's see, gosh, I met up with some Harley Davidson riders on one episode. That was fun because I got a Harley ride.
Yay!
And so it's really all kinds of things. Crazy pub night, pub sing-along night. It was more a matter of my quirky take because
yeah.
I'm quite a quirky person, so I think quirkiness surrounds me.
Oh, that sounds like fun. So how can people watch this Mitzi TV?
Oh, gosh, just Google Mitzi TV and you'll find it. It's
okay.
Free for everyone. It's on the internet.
Okay, fantastic. Mitzi TV, that's MITZI TV. And
correct.
Also to direct people to your website as well is Mitzi, is it Soretto? Is that the right pronunciation?
Yes, brilliant. You said it perfectly.
MitziSoretto.com, and that's MITZISZERETO, MitziSoretto.com. Mitzi, thanks so much for joining us and good luck with the book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Talk Property, the new property-based program on Talk Radio Europe, designed to keep us all informed in the changes to the property market. Brought to you by Cotijo Del Mar, courtesy of FM Consulting. Telephone 952-904035. That's 952-904035. Or go online to cotijodelmar.com. Talk Property, for information you can trust.